WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and tomorrow the New York Academy of Medicine is holding what they call a Festival of Medical History and the Arts, and along with workshops on anatomical drawing, a recently unearthed film about PTSD starring Gene Kelly, and other explorations of the intersection of medical science and the humanities, our old friend Lawrence Weschler will present one of his wonder cabinets, as he calls them, a series of panels and lectures on the body and illness. He joins me now, along with two of the artists who'll be participating, theater performer, writer, and producer Jane Gauntlett, whose talk is called What It Feels Like to Have an Epileptic Fit, and Reva Lehrer, no relation as far as either of us knows, an artist and lecturer in anatomy at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, who was born with spina bifida and whose talk is titled Jared, Self-Portrait in Formaldehyde. Welcome back to the show, Lawrence Weschler.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome, Jane Gauntlett and Reva Lehrer.
Thank you.
So, Lawrence Weschler, is this the first arts festival at the New York Academy of Medicine? Well, I've been there to use the library, but
isn't it an amazing library, by the way?
It's
a fascinating place, by the way, because it's kind of fallen out of the public view, the place. It was founded in 1847. It's an amazing building.
Up on about 103rd Street.
103rd and 5th Avenue. And it's one of those buildings you walk into, where has this been all my life? And the library itself is one of the jewels of the city. It is one of the first, I think it may be the only medical library of its kind that is open to the public on the East Coast. And this is incredibly great stuff, you know, that you can find in there. But they started last year. The Center for the History of Medicine was begun, and with partly the idea of raising the profile. And so I was hired to put on one of these wonder cabinets. And I'm working, by the way, with Brooklyn's Morbid Anatomy, which is an incredible organization. We're going to literally have a two-ring circus of just great things all day long.
Did you say Morbid Anatomy?
Morbid Anatomy is the name of a wonderful place in Brooklyn, and they are putting on little half-hour things all day long. We start at 11 o'clock in the morning. For example, at 11 o'clock in the morning, and you should really come for this, there's going to be a smackdown between a guy who has a laptop full of amazing images of outer space and another guy who has a laptop full of amazing images of the brain, so telescope versus microscope, and it's going to be a smackdown of that, and I'll be kind of being Don Pardo. We'll have a banjo player playing dueling banjos, but then later in the day, at 3 o'clock, Jane is going to do talk about this epileptic thing, which we'll talk about in a second.
We will do, absolutely.
And then at 4 o'clock, we'll have Oliver Sacks. All this, by the way, is free, unlike the New Yorker Festival, which is
also tomorrow,
which is this weekend. It costs a fortune, but we're free.
So anyway. A different kind of day at the New
York
Academy.
And then at the end of the day, it will be Reva.
Of Medicine. And Reva, I realize that I mispronounced and totally misled people about the title of your talk. I said Jared, which is a stupid misreading of the title. It is, of course, Jarred, Self-Portrait in Formaldehyde.
Yes.
Right? Because that relates to the formaldehyde.
Right.
Jarred, of course.
Exactly.
So you were born with a medical condition, spina bifida, and became an artist. Well, Jane, you were a theater artist who had your medicine thrust upon you after a mugger knocked you and your bike into traffic, and one of the lasting effects is epileptic seizures. So, Reva, starting with you, can you talk a little bit about how your body informs your art and vice versa?
Well, I'm an artist who focuses on portraits of people mostly with impairments, not entirely, but I'm very, very interested in how your body affects the course of your life and that kind of circular dialogue. And this really came out of being born with an impairment that meant that I went through a childhood of a lot of surgeries and becoming part of disability culture in my late 30s and meeting a lot of people who are doing really interesting, intense work around physicality and art. And eventually I became artist in residence at the University of Illinois in the cadaver lab, and that was just completely fascinating. So I've gotten to know the body both as the vehicle you live your life in and the body as a sort of construction. So I started thinking about how seeing specimens of disability in museums relate to looking at bodies with impairments.
And Jane, what about you? You founded a theater company in order to communicate what living with traumatic brain injury is like, correct?
Yeah, the theater company is called Sublime and Ridiculous, and we make interactive theater. The project that I'm going to be speaking about and demonstrating tomorrow is a project called In My Shoes. That's a project that was designed to approach an unusual way of communicating. The attack left me with real problems communicating. I get terrible fatigue and also the epilepsy.
So In My Shoes, like walk a mile in my shoes.
Yeah.
And so what do people do?
We present it at hospitals but also in theatres. And the piece that I'm demonstrating tomorrow is called Waking in Slough, and it's a recreation of an epileptic seizure that I had a couple of years ago. So I would meet the participant, give them my handbag and the things I keep in my handbag and introduce myself. I would then give them audiovisual headsets so they would see the world through my eyes, hear my thoughts.
These visors here, you put on these visors, which are video visors.
And?
Yeah, go ahead.
And it's multisensory, so you would hear, touch, taste, feel, smell everything that I did during the epileptic seizure that I'm recreating.
So in your shoes, in your brain, through this instrument.
Yeah.
Listeners, we could take a few phone calls for our guests. Do you also live at the intersection of art and medicine? Have you gained important artistic insight or kind of humanities-level insight from the way your own body differs from what might be called the norm that you express through your art or through your mind? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you want to tell your story or ask our guest a question. Lawrence Wetzel, one of the participants I see is going to be historian Mike Sapol. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From the National Library of Medicine. And we will mention as a little sidelight to the news that he's unable to be with us this morning because of the government shutdown.
Think about this. He's not being paid, but he is forbidden to appear on the radio because he's a federal employee.
He's an archivist, right?
He's an archivist, and he's the guy who found this incredible Gene Kelly. I think about this, by the way. Gene Kelly was in the Navy, actually. And it was 1944. This is before he's...
Wait, before we get into the content,
right.
I'll just say, you're not getting paid. Yeah. None of our guests get paid.
Right, right, right.
They're invited as guests to be on the show. No money
changes hands. And they are American citizens.
And he is not allowed to come in that capacity because it would be considered part of his job, which he's not allowed to do
right.
during the furlough.
Even though he is not being paid not to do his job. So if he's not being paid not to be allowed to come on this show.
Just wanted to be clear about
anyway,
that.
Anyway, no, it's completely
so
crazy.
He found this post-World War II training film that
well,
was
Well, actually it was 1944, 45,
okay.
And Gene Kelly was a communications officer, and he took part in making this remarkable documentary. It's a half-hour training film about shell shock or post-traumatic stress, although it's called in those days post-combat irritability. And he stars in it. It's just an amazing film.
So here's about a minute of a clip from that Gene Kelly film.
Was it really bad? I mean, all the time?
No, of course not. Usually we're just moving from one place to another. Noumea, Guam, Moresby, all those stinking little places.
Tell me, Bob, when it happened, I mean, when the ship sank, were the sharks?
Shut up! Shut up, all of you!
Even before I was out of the house, I was ashamed of myself. I had that burning feeling in my stomach and my hands were shaking. I think I know why now, but then I didn't.
Why, Lucas?
That brought me back by the questions of those goddamn valves, and I was all wound up and scared all over again. I was too scared to know that that's what it was. I really thought that they didn't understand me anymore. Well, anyway, they should have known better than to ask me those questions.
That being scared is certainly part of it, Lucas.
All right, so about a minute of the late World War II film Combat Fatigue Irritability, a naval training film starring Gene Kelly in which he plays the role of Seaman Bob Lucas, whose ship was sunk in battle. Jane, is that a condition that your project might address?
Absolutely. I'm really keen to make projects about other people. I'm a bit bored of making about my own experiences. So, yeah, absolutely. We're currently exploring making pieces about Tourette's, stroke, bipolar disorder, gender change. I'm really keen to approach.
And things have changed a lot between then and now in terms of what we call, what I think we now call post-traumatic stress syndrome, and who the onus gets put on for adapting to it. So here's another clip from the film in which the doctor kind of explains the condition in a way that puts the onus on the patient. I think it's a fascinating change of emphasis in how we see and treat brain trauma. So here's another 35 seconds from that film.
He can now realize that all that disconnected, fed-up feeling, which showed itself as a fighting bad temper, comes from something underneath, from a feeling of guilt, a feeling of unworthiness, a feeling which he twisted about so that it looked as though everyone else were in the wrong. Everyone but Lucas himself. That's why we have these group discussions, to help you and Lucas see yourselves as others see you, and to see problems like yours that other men have. Furthermore, you and Lucas can now put your new knowledge to use in a variety of constructive ways.
That is so interesting, Ren.
Also, just the tone, the authoritative tone of the 1940s, the music in the background.
It's classic 1940s, 50s, 60s documentary style. But it the words that he just spoke, it looked as though everyone else were in the wrong, everyone but Lucas himself.
Right, exactly.
Now I think we would say it's on everybody else to understand the post-traumatic stress syndrome or the traumatic brain injury and its effects that service people are going through when they return.
I think, in a way, that's the whole day there is going to be putting – it's not just in Jane's shoes but in Reva's shoes and Oliver Sacks, by the way, is going to be talking about Auden and Luria, who were the great people who trained him, in a way, to see the awakenings patients. They were the guardian angels. But precisely to understand, the refocusing of things on the individual and people understanding that they aren't just cases of something and so forth.
Reva, on that contrast, do we run the risk of overemphasizing victimhood today in a way that our grandparents maybe didn't?
I would say more that we're still in a world where people who are different are living with a lot of shame, and it can come from just about everywhere, public, medical intervention, discussions, the way the art world works. There's a lot of continuing stigma, and I would say that we're not at a point where worrying about victimhood is my main concern. I think that there's a lot of language that gets put around the experience of being different that makes it look like we're talking about ourselves as victims when we're really talking about living with stigma.
Let's take a call. John on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. John, thanks for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to throw in here, I don't know if it's pertinent, but I became an actor, and I later came to realize that I had what's called Asperger's syndrome. And so one day I was doing the make ends meet job, driving a taxi cab, and the lady behind her, I was taking her to her gig. She was had a guitar with her, and she noticed that I seemed to change characters and different personalities. And she said to me, I told her, I admitted that I had Asperger's, and she said, well, that's good because you're doing the right thing for your condition, you know. And so I just wanted to share that because I did become quite a successful actor. I traveled around the world a little bit and did a lot of won awards and went to a really, really good school. And so I just wanted to throw that in there.
John, it's a great story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting for you, Jane, in this context. I mean, how you have taken the situation that you have and really transformed it into an incredible creative opportunity. And
I mean, it's, you want to say something about that? You're smiling. You're blushing.
Yeah, I guess so. I was just thinking that with a lot of help from comrades and support.
And Jill in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jill.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. What are you thinking?
Well, this is a topic that's close to my heart because I'm a medical illustrator. So art and science are what I do every day. And so this conference, I think I have a colleague that's going to be speaking at the conference. And for me, the importance of art is in the educational aspects of it. Part of my job is to create illustrations so patients can understand what's going on in their body, or so that other doctors can understand new techniques or procedures in a way that you really can't get across with text.
Good point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's fascinating, by the way, to go to attend Riva's classes at the Art Institute of Chicago, the School of the Art Institute, and just she's just this bundle of energy teaching. You know, what would you call it? Normative anatomy, in one sense. My favorite vision of you is with the skeleton
Norbert.
Norbert the skeleton is twice as tall as you are, and you're on elevator shoes, but with just this incredible passion of how the body works.
Sid in Brooklyn, you have a question for Riva?
For Riva, but really for both of them, I guess. I had a math teacher in high school who had spina bifida, and other than the obvious physical manifestations of it, was very good-natured, very outgoing, very positive, very pleasant, except in the face of the word that I used was derogation, comments, kids making snotty remarks and laughing and that sort of thing. And I'm just wondering if Rivka uses the idea of how vicious some people can see, whether it can be, or whether human nature being what it is, whether the idea of derogation enters into her work in that capacity, or for either of the women, if they want to comment.
Thank you.
Well, I'm 55. I'm still going through that every single day. I was walking down the street yesterday in Chicago, day before, doing some shopping in the Loop, and I was being followed by a pack of teenagers who were screaming at me for several blocks, things like, I can't say on the radio, but expletive, expletive, what the expletive is wrong with you, what the expletive are you wearing, you know, shrieking and laughing and following me, and I was just shopping, you know, it's just kind of a normal day, so this is...
How do you take that?
Well, at the time, I ducked into Target and shook for a while. most of the time, what I do is I do wear big, funky shoes. I have a wardrobe of flashy shoelaces that try and...
fashion it up a little bit.
You know, if you're going to get stared at, you may as well be stared at for being interesting, too. but, you know, there's recovery time that has to happen with this stuff.
And your talk is about an experience you had last year, finding a fetal specimen very like yourself on display at the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia.
Yes.
What did that mean for you? And we just have about 30 seconds.
Well, I'm first-generation survivor, basically, of spina bifida. The medical breakthroughs happened right about when I was born. And so a lot of my talk is about what it means to be first-generation, and some thoughts about human display and things that are missing in museums that keep us from being completely detached when looking at people with impairments.
And maybe we need more conferences like this.
Yes,
Bren
please.
Wechsler.
I'm trying.
With functional MRIs and nanotechnology, maybe there's a danger in thinking science without art can take care of everything.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, when I used to have the Institute for the Humanities at NYU, I insisted that the sciences were at the heart of the humanities. They're not different. And I mean, it's not a separation. It's about the wonders. That's why I call it Wonder Cabinet. And just experiencing the world with awe and marvel. That's what I like to do.
And we have to leave it there. We have a link on our website for more information about tomorrow's free Festival of Medical History and the Arts at the New York Academy of Medicine, 5th Avenue and 103rd Street. Thank you to Lawrence Wechsler, Jane Gauntlett, and Riva Lehrer for joining us this morning. And have a great weekend, everybody. I'm Brian Lehrer. Talk to you Monday.